This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Well, hello, this is Scott Wells with the MagicWordPodcast.com, and we are preparing to go to San Antonio to the 88th Annual International Brotherhood of Magicians Convention, and it's just up the road a piece from us, as we would say, here in Texas, only about 250 miles or so, and maybe a little bit shorter than that. But we're going to be driving up, and it should be a lot of fun. We have a lot of registrants who are all going to be converging from around the world on San Antonio. And we're going to be having a lot of great entertainment, and going to be driving up there along the way with Don Weiberg, who is the past international president, or the PIP, I guess as they say, of the IBM. And once we get there, we've got just a ton of people we're going to be talking to. Now, if you guys haven't liked the Facebook page on Facebook, that is our Magic Word the Magic Word Podcast on the Magic Word, be sure to do that, because we're going to be trying something different here soon, and that is of broadcasting live on Facebook. They have that new feature, and so that way we can turn it on, and that way you guys can actually write in and ask questions as I'm talking with different people throughout the weekend, and we'll kind of see how this works out. Hopefully it'll work out fine, and then also then into future podcasts, if we can, I will also set up the camera or my iPad and turn on Facebook and go live, and that way that when we're talking with someone, you can chat with them then also. So anyhow, that's kind of what's going on. Should be, again, a lot of fun, and you will get to be part of the fun just by tuning in and listening to each of the daily updates. I'm going to be spending the day talking with folks and then nighttime of editing and putting them all together and then posting it, so each morning that you should have some good live up-to-date information starting on Sunday morning, then Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday morning. So you will get to know what was happening here if you don't get the chance to attend. And until then, we'll see you in San Antonio. This is Scotty L. Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com, and we have arrived in San Antonio, and we're at the Grand Hyatt Hotel on the riverfront in San Antonio, and I'm here with the incoming president. I guess that'll be the 89th year of the International Brotherhood of Magicians, with Oscar Munoz. Hey there, Oscar.
Hey, buddy. How you guys doing? How's everybody out there doing?
We're doing fine, thank you.
Okay, great. Hey, nice. Thank you. Thanks for waving.
Listen, I wanted to congratulate you, first of all.
Thank you.
I know that your reign has not started yet.
No, not yet.
That's right.
The stress has, though.
But Joe Turner still has some more time
until
left.
Until the 5th, I believe.
Yep. Yeah. So every president always has some big shoes, it seems like, to fill. And I know that he's been traveling around a lot throughout the world.
I hope to God that I do what Sean and Joe have done the last 3 years, or 2 years, I should say. Yeah. They've represented IBM to the best of their abilities and some more. Both of them are doing an excellent job, and I hope I just carry the torch as equally as they have.
Well, you know, when Sean was president, that Ice McDonald was the president of the SAM, and they worked very closely together, and I'm sure that Joe had worked well with this year's president.
Right.
Do you have any plans, or have you talked with him?
Yes, Jeff Secorum. I talked to him at one of the conventions. We sat down, talked, shook hands, and working with each other. Mm-hmm. You know, to better both organizations and support each other.
Because next year we're going to be having the joint convention in Louisville?
Louisville, that's right.
Kentucky. Yeah,
2017 will be in Louisville, combined SAM-IBM convention. Yeah.
And so during this coming year, what kind of agenda do you have, or what are you thinking that you're going to be doing?
Well, as president, I really thought about this. I want to be more inclusive with our members, allowing some of the members to have other special talents to help us out. You know, like for instance, they're gifted in writing, or they're gifted in organizational skills, they're gifted in negotiational skills. So I wanted to look for people that are out there, that are members, that we as an organization can benefit from their special talents.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
And so you got a few people in mind as far as having some committees formed and everything?
I got some people in mind, people that I've asked. Some are like, yes, I'm glad to help. Some are, I'm one of those guys who like to just learn tricks, not get involved.
Yeah. That's fine, too.
But this organization is an organization for all.
Yeah.
Not just for
It's a house with many rooms.
Very much so. And, and a lot of egos.
Yeah.
You know, and so we just have to negotiate between egos.
Right.
We all have one. They're like butts.
Right. That's right.
Yeah, some are bigger than others.
One way of putting it, for sure. So a lot of things, again, that this last year, by the way, the kind of the, some of the background.
Yeah, they're getting ready for the stage. We're setting up the stage this year for our convention.
In the banquet hall.
In the banquet hall, yeah, that's what we're doing.
That's what you hear in the background over here from time to time, folks. So I was saying that last year, I know that Joe had traveled a lot of places, and you travel around the world performing a lot of places. I know at Blackpool and else. Right. Have you got a few things that for sure that you're going to hit this, and this convention, people where they'll see you?
Sure, yeah. I'm going to be, soon it's going to be at the...
British Ring?
The British Ring.
Are you going to be Colin, for the Michigan? Magic Get Together?
Yeah. Going to be the British Ring. I'll be performing at the Magic Circle in December for the Christmas party, Christmas show, I should say. In November, I'll be in the Magic Castle for the Veterans Day celebration. So I'll be performing
for
there
which for one? Which event?
The Veterans Day.
Oh, Veterans Day. Sorry.
Yeah. In
being
November.
A vet yourself, I mean, that's appropriate.
Yeah. So. So that's the near future.
Are you going to be going to the SAM? Is that next week?
That's next week. No, I wasn't invited to the SAM yet.
Okay.
I think that will be like when I'm leaving because they have theirs, I think, the week after or something like that.
About the time that you head over to Colon, Michigan for the get together, Abbott's get together. Okay. Yeah. Are you going to be going to Magic Live, I guess? Or not?
No, not this year.
Okay.
No, not this year.
But I may or may not have it.
Well,
next year. You know?
Well, yeah, I'm booked, though. I'm booked for a lot of like private events.
Like for real shows.
For the paying public, yes, I'm booked for the real shows once I make the money.
Yes. Well, now, one thing, too, that I almost overlooked, I don't even think of you necessarily this way, but you really are the first Hispanic or have a Mexican heritage or background as
well,
an IBM president?
No, Rolando Santos was, I think, the
okay,
first.
That counts.
Yeah, Rolando Santos was the second. But I'm more darker than he is. So,
that's why I think of
him. Yeah, that's probably why people don't think of me as, yeah. No, Rolando Santos, I think, was the first one. I'm not quite sure, but I am the first Gold Cup winner who's ever been president.
That's true. I don't think that any of them won the Gold Cup or the gold medal.
Right.
And there have been how many Gold Cups that have been awarded?
7.
Out of the last, 30 years?
Right.
Yeah.
But the last one that won them was a good friend of mine, Chase Curtis.
Chase Curtis, yeah. Is he still working in Branson, by the way?
I have no idea. I lost track of Chase. Yeah. I don't know where he's at. I see him on Facebook once in a while. He looks like he's doing great.
But also, this happens to be your hometown, living here in San Antonio.
San Antonio, Texas, yes.
So you just kind of come across town. I mean, just drive a little bit. So.
Yeah, well, I have two homes. One's down south of Far Texas, and then I have one up here.
Yeah.
When I do a lot of the school shows there, because my market was so, I developed the market down in the valley so much that it's hard to leave something without spending so much more money to advertise in San Antonio.
Yeah.
So hopefully, gradually, I will get better known here in San Antonio than I did in the valley. Because I still get calls from the valley, and I'll book shows. It's only forward drive, so it's
going to take a while to start getting well known here in this
market. Right. And there are some really good magicians out here that are pre-established, and I don't want to, you know, come in and say it's my town, that kind of thing.
Sure.
You know, it's
because you've only been here what 2 years,
right?
Basically,
2 years.
Yeah. When we say Far Texas, people are saying Far, like PHARR, which is out in West Texas, out towards El Paso.
Yeah, it's about 4 hours south of San Antonio. If people have no idea how far south that is, that's, you know, you're almost about 20 miles away from the Mexican border.
Yeah, pretty far.
Pretty far, yes. It is.
Is it really a suburb of El Paso?
It's in Hidalgo County. It's Lower Rio Grande Valley.
What am I thinking of? That where George Robinson lives.
This is Annenberg. George is in Annenberg,
but and that's near you.
That's right next to me. Yeah.
Okay, that's the one I was thinking of, I guess. Then, and again, those who may not know George Robinson, he's the one who owns
Viking Magic, Viking and Collector's Workshop.
Exactly. Quality products, good stuff. So, since we are here for the first day, and this is going to be updated each day, is there an appeal you would like to make to people who might be on the fence, thinking about coming, and make sure they see some shows, or what's going to be, what to expect?
We have some really cool acts coming up. People from Foolus, from Penn & Teller's Foolus show. You're going to get to see them live. Demir.
James DeMere?
Yeah, James DeMere. I saw him. I worked with him in a convention with Steve Daly's convention, Cordabra.
Cordabra.
Yeah. And boy, I tell you what, watching him perform, when his music kicks in, it takes me back when I was a kid. I mean, I don't know how the guy, he looks like he's my age. But, you know, watching this guy is just like, I've seen him on Johnny Carson show performing and you're seeing an act that has taken them all over the world.
You know, I mean, Joseph Gabriel.
Joseph
Gabriel.
Go, yeah, that's what did I say?
You said James DeMere.
Oh.
I was going to say, James is here also?
No. I'm sorry. Yeah. They all look alike. They're all birds. You know.
Another bird act.
Yeah, it's another bird act.
Just another bird act.
But watching him, I mean, it's just amazing to you see him on TV, now you see him live, and the act is equally as good as you saw him the first time.
Well, I'm excited about seeing Tommy Tan and Emma Lee.
Yeah, yeah.
Who were on American Got Talent.
Yeah, American Got Talent. They're going to be in the production the Broadway production of The Illusionists.
Oh,
they already stepped into that role, and so gosh, to see people like, and they got me. I saw them twice. I'm like, what the heck are they doing?
Well, we saw them at FISM, and they won.
They could be burned at the stake. I mean, that's us.
They're amazing.
Yeah.
But you talk about Foolish, Sean Farquhar, who had won on there. It was going to be hosting that show with Handsome Jack, John Lovick, and Eric Jones, and Steve Brundage. I'm trying to think of some of the other guys who are going to be on. It's going to be a fantastic show then too.
Right. No, it's going to be awesome. I think Sean is. But a really good lineup for everybody.
And with Johnny Thompson and Pam being
the guests of honor.
They're going to be hanging around all
weekend. I mean, legends. You got legends walking around.
Yeah.
So, and Johnny and Pam are, I think, really cool for our organization and for this convention to have people come.
Yeah, Lance Burton has been helping with the youth event and you know, year after year, and so it's kind of cool to see him just walking around and chatting with people.
Yeah, see the stars. I mean,
and Jeff McBride, Eugene Berger, you know, are working with the youth also. Just kind of
and those guys are, I mean, they're awesome, awesome people.
Yeah.
And they'll, you know, you want their autographs, they'll stop and
come
sign.
Down and get a selfie, whatever.
Yeah, yeah, no kidding. Yeah.
So you need to come on down. Well, Oscar, thank you very much.
Thank
I
you
wish
for
you
me.
Luck in the in your incoming year.
Oh, yeah, well, if you see me crying, just come over and say, this till shall pass. And, you know, that's
and it will.
And it will.
Thank you very much.
All righty.
Okay, for the Magic Word Podcast, that was Oscar Munoz.
Bye, guys.
This is Scotty out. Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicBoardPodcast.com, and I got with me the international president of the International Brotherhood of Magicians, Mr. Joe M. Turner. Hi there, Joe.
Hey, Scott. Good to be back.
And hello, Facebook. We're trying something new for you guys who are listening to this podcast then right now. You're getting to see something for the first time if you're watching this, and also that you can hear this then later as it actually gets posted on the website that is on the podcast for the Magic Word. But this way it will allow some of the viewers or listeners to tune in, and you can actually ask questions in live time, and we can ask Joe a question from time to time. So right now, so Joe, that I wanted to ask you just about how your year has been. What has been, what's been some of the what are highs and lows?
Highs, well, mostly highs.
Okay.
First of all, it's great to be here in San Antonio. I just finished dinner. Tex-Mex on the Riverwalk.
But of course, you got to have that.
Chicken flautas and salsa and everything, so that's fantastic.
Yeah.
And it's really, I've seen a lot of the world this year. I would say that's the best thing about being president for me this year was the opportunity to meet so many members, visit so many rings and countries and continents all over the world.
You said all four continents?
I went to four continents.
All four.
North America, Asia, South America, and Europe.
Yep.
A couple of times to Europe. Countries I've never visited, Thailand, I'd never been. I went to Bangkok last year. I went to Bulgaria, not often visited, but...
Have magic clubs in Bulgaria?
A magic convention. Okay. I did a magic convention and a network television special in Sofia. So it was a wonderful, enriching experience that I will treasure and not want to repeat.
It's not one you'd want to repeat. Okay.
It's great to do once.
Yeah.
And now I'm excited for Oscar to have his chance to go explore the world and do his thing.
On his own.
That'll be great.
Well, we do have one question that came in here. Eric Falconer was asking,
What do you think of Scott's beard? Scott's beard, it looks a little more salt than pepper.
Thank you, Ray, for asking on that.
That's good.
That's right. So as far as some of the other places that you visit, I mean, I know you don't want to say that one was necessarily better than another one, but I guess that what really sticks out? What happened this year that's like, wow, this I want to go back there?
I was treated magnificently in local rings, at domestic conventions, at international conventions. I will say that the Quick Hands Project in Bulgaria, which I was there in April, they are spectacularly energetic about magic and trying to lift up the level of magic performance in the nation of Bulgaria.
Yeah.
And so I'm really excited for them. Also, the the new Houdini Museum that has opened in Budapest, in Hungary.
Which is where he was born.
It was his home city. And so David Merlini, with work and assistance from John Gaughan and others, has opened something called House of Houdini on Castle Hill in Budapest. And it's the only museum in Europe dedicated to Houdini's work and life. So, we got the LOL. So I would say that those are some exciting things that are happening elsewhere in the country, in the world. Elsewhere in the world. Mamata is doing a yeoman's job in Thailand trying to get this festival to keep going and be successful. And he's bringing great acts in year after year to Bangkok to perform. So there's really exciting things happening. The Three of Clubs convention that I went to outside Vancouver last fall, it's one of the best times I've ever had at a convention.
Really? And because?
It was intimate, it was small, it was, there was a young vibe, I guess, and it was energetic and just fun.
Were you the oldest guy there? You kind of
I wasn't the oldest guy there, but it was nice to play young.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's like the thing you see on Facebook. It says, you know, I can pretend I'm 30 until I hang out with 30-year-olds, and then I'm like, nope, I'm 46.
Your body tells you something different. Yes, that's right. So, well, did you feel that you got accomplished this year, things that you wanted to do as president?
I didn't get everything accomplished that I wanted to do. I'm losing my camera. I don't know what I'm looking at there. You never get everything done. It's a one-year term. There are some things that I wanted to do that I didn't get completely finished. A new ring forming in Serbia. I've been working with some people there to get that done, and just some of the details didn't get done in time for that timeline to finish before this convention, so that would have been great. But a lot of things that I do think we did well. I think we've taken some steps to, without going into the boring administrative details, there are some things about the way we do conventions and contracts and
change a few things.
There's some things that need to be changed and some things that we have to address as an organization and as an industry as a whole that are probably going to be a little bumpy for a lot of us, for all of us in the United States over the next few years. But, you know, we'll get through it. It's about being open and honest and good communication with other organizations. David Bowers, the president of the SAM, and I think we worked well together this year.
I was just asking Oscar about that, since he's going to be coming up as the president and going to be going in with Jeff as the as the SAM president. I know that Sean had worked closely with Ice McDonald in the past, and they had a good relationship. And so I thought perhaps that you had worked well as well.
I think that's going to be a touch point for all the administrations of both organizations going forward, is to try to sustain a more open relationship, good lines of communication. We're all on the same team.
Yeah.
We're all trying to uplift Magic at home and abroad.
Right.
And what's good for Magic is good for both of us.
And on that issue that you had said in your recent president's report from the Linking Ring, could you kind of give a quick synopsis as far as what you're trying to do to encourage local rings at the local level?
Yeah, well, I would just issue the challenge that I don't want to put everything in a sports analogy, but, you know, you're down and it's the fourth quarter and something happens and somehow your team rallies and you come together and you realize you can achieve this objective and you win the game. It's a cliche, but I would say that as Magic clubs, let's just stay specifically with the IBM, we have some challenges. We have some challenges
to try to attract
in our membership, attracting younger members, attracting dedicated members who really want to energize and innovate what we're doing. And there's no question that it's difficult. There's a perception among some aspects of our industry that Magic Club membership is trite or cliche or mediocre
cheesy,
all of those things. And we have to shoulder our fair share of the responsibility for changing that, right? We didn't get here in one night. We won't get out of it in one day.
Good point.
But we can start by the way we encourage excellence at the local ring level. And we are supposed to have great conventions. We're supposed to have a great magazine. We have people like Sammy Smith, and we have people who are working hard to make those pieces happen. But the single most important experience that any member of the IBM has is what happens at their ring. And so if you go to a ring, let's say that we do get a young person to come in and they see people performing but the whole meeting is spent talking about, well, this is the magic I used to do.
Yeah.
Or do you remember this? Or they see bad magic.
Or they see a new trick and they say, oh, that's such and such. That's an old trick.
Well,
and, you know,
and so if we aren't making our own efforts to improve our own performances at our ring meetings,
yeah,
and to make that a place that is open to innovation in the way meetings are held, in the way meetings are organized, if we are lax in letting new people come up through the ranks and take leadership roles in our organization, if we get really comfortable with the way things are and not willing to explore some alternative approaches to things, then the harvest we reap from that is a stagnant organization.
Right.
And that doesn't mean change for the sake of change, but what that means is there are young people with great ideas, mm-hmm, that I think could re-energize our local rings, our mid-level and our upper level of the IBM, and we've got to make a more concerted effort to engage them.
I agree with that. You know, a lot of people think perhaps that things are not going to change just because of me. And there was, in other words, that whatever small thing that I do is not going to make a big change. And I go back to something that a Zen master had said, that if you think that one person doesn't make a change, or that, you know, one thing doesn't make a change, then try to sleep with a mosquito.
know? That's a good point. It's easy to pay lip service to this idea on a podcast. I would say it's very easy for me to stand here and say, well, we should do this, we should do that. But where it really hits is when I, as Joe, or you as Scott, or you as someone who is out there,
member and working,
decides
in the
to performer, take responsibility for yourself to demonstrate excellence at a meeting. Yeah. That will start. We have a question that's come in. You're eager to support founding college clubs. What resources will be available to we who are interested in that? Yes, we have created
a new... Could you read that again so people...
Okay. It says, I am eager to support college clubs, a collegiate level of the IBM.
Yes.
And this says, what resources will be available to those who are interested in doing that?
Okay.
I would start by contacting our ring coordinator, who at the moment is Roger Way, but that's going to be it'll be changing shortly. But the role of the title of the person that you want to talk to is the ring coordinator, and they can get you the details on what it takes to form a collegiate level ring that we've created this status, mm-hmm, and it's going to be a very highly digital experience. We're not going to make you take a paper magazine and all of that stuff.
Right.
It's going to be designed for low cost electronic delivery type of opportunities, mm-hmm, for people like that in college to have. And so if you would like to, I welcome you to email me if you want to, jmt@turnermagic.com. That's my email address. Email me and I'll try to make the necessary introductions. This is John Barr. So John, that's it. Very good. Thank you, sir. You're welcome.
Very good. Well, thank you, Joe, very much. I appreciate you being a guest here on the Magic Word Podcast.
Hey, always a pleasure, and I hope to do it again. Take care, Scott.
All right. And so for the Magic Word Podcast, and thank you guys, by the way, on Facebook for the questions over there and for tuning in. We're going to be doing a few more of these, too. So be sure and tune in. Until next time, this is Scotty out. Hello, this is Scott Wells with the MagicWordPodcast.com, and I'm here live with Andy Gladwin. Hey there, Andy.
Hello, Facebook. Hello, everywhere else.
Yes, that's right. Well, we're trying this again. This is the second time we tried something a little bit earlier yesterday, and so this gives you an opportunity then to sign on and take a look then now. So I'm talking with Andy, direct from the UK.
Literally direct. Just got in. Yeah.
Did you really?
Mm-hmm.
So do you live in London, or what part of...
I live like 2 hours away from London. I moved away from London a few years ago to start family, and we moved into the country, so it's much nicer.
So you don't have a flat anymore. You're kind of out in the...
Exactly. We actually have room to move now.
Well, that's nice. Do you have a dog and everything? I mean, you kind of...
Two cats.
What are their names?
Suki and Lizzie.
You know, what's Suki? That sounds...
I don't know. My wife... wife's the cat lady.
Same with me. You know, when I got married, a cat came with a deal.
Yep,
you know?
Pretty much.
Okay. We had a Siamese cat, and they kind of stuck around for a while. So you've been in charge also of the session for a while. And tell me something about what's going on with the... with that, and what actually it is.
Well, the session is a convention I started in my hometown. We actually started it in an old people's home, and there were like 60 people. That was mm-hmm. 12 years ago now. And then it's grown and grown, and now it's so big that the only place in the UK to really have it is London. Mm-hmm. So it's right next to Heathrow Airport. It's pretty much in the Heathrow Airport property. So it's amazing.
You can fly in. You got a hotel right there.
You land. If you're flying from New York, say, it's 6 hours door to door. It's amazing.
Yeah.
And then you just get there and the convention starts immediately. So it's much nicer. It used to be that you'd have to travel for 2, maybe 3 hours from
the
airport.
Had to rent a car or do something.
Yeah.
So now you just...
It was a pain. Now you're there. There's driverless cars that takes you from the airport to the hotel. So it's really cool.
Like a little shuttle there. Now, how many years have they been doing the session?
I think it's 12 now.
Okay.
Yeah.
And how long have you been involved with it? Since the beginning? Or
yeah, it was my
idea.
I started the convention with a friend of mine, and then we, as Vanishing Ink grew, we moved it to a Vanishing Ink deal. So Josh got involved, and now, with that and Magi Fest, I think I've organized 18 conventions now.
Well, that's where I was going then next. Of course, you've been involved with Josh on the Magi Fest. I know that you guys have been partners for a long time, and kind of sounds like just a great partnership, the way that it's kind of worked out, because you've taken the Magi Fest into a new level also with it.
Yeah, and the Magi Fest is getting bigger and better. Like when we started it was a convention that was dwindling, and there weren't many young magicians going,
right,
and we had to change that, and we've done some really cool things to change it.
What kind of things?
This is my favorite one, and it means so much to me, because people who have followed mine and Josh's path through magic know that we started when we were very young, and
still are.
Well, Josh is getting old now. He's like 35.
You're still
young. Yeah, I'm young, he's not. And it meant the world to us to go to conventions as young magicians, and we learned so much. But that wasn't happening at Magi Fest, so we decided to change that. And we now have a scholarship that we bring in roughly 50 magicians a year, 50 young magicians. Mm-hmm. So we believe that if you can't afford to go to a convention, if you can't afford to travel or that kind of thing, then you should still have the opportunity.
Sure.
So now every year we bring in at least 50 young magicians to come and enjoy the Magi Fest.
Yeah, and how many people actually then, aside from those 50, will be attending? What have you got?
I think it's like 1,000. It's edging very close to 1,000 now.
Yeah, it's getting close to like Magic Live type numbers.
Yeah, which is a biannual. So I think we actually have the biggest annual magic convention in the U.S.
Yeah.
I think. Don't quote me on that. But
it's larger. You know, in looking at the IBM, where we have this year probably about 400 registrants, and I'm not sure what the SAM's doing. I'm thinking probably somewhere around 300 or so. So, you know, 1,000 is not just a little bit more. I mean, that's a pretty good size.
But the IBM SAM, though, combined, that
combined, we did like 1,200 or 1,300, I think, the last
I went to the first one. That was amazing.
Yeah.
It was my favorite convention, I think, actually.
It was a great one. This next year, of course, is going to be in Nashville.
Great.
Or is it Louisville? Louisville. I think it's going to be in
one
Louisville.
One of the bills.
Yeah, it's up there. One of the places. Well, let's see if we got some...
we have some questions.
Questions over here. Let's see. No sound.
Baron has no sound.
Okay. Upcoming books. Justin Longshore asks, are there any upcoming books that you can talk about? Anything that you're working on over here, Andy?
Yeah.
Vanishing Ink is doing?
This has been a great journey for me, actually. It's like I think it was a 15-hour journey to get here, and I spent the whole time on the plane working on the new Jack Parker book, which is called Explorations. It's another 50, maybe 60 tricks by Jack Parker, who was a friend of mine. He passed away 10 years ago next year, so to honor that, I have a new book coming out with 50 unpublished tricks from Jack, which is going to be great. I've almost finished a book by a magician called Scott Robinson, who you may know. He's not the most well-known magician, but he is a phenomenal magician. So that's coming out maybe next year as well. And then Vanishing Ink, we actually have 10 books that are almost finished. And obviously, they'll be staggered.
Yes.
But we have a lot of books coming out over the next
Anything
few years.
Anything you can talk about or like some of
the... the one I've just finished the layout on is by Roberto Giobbe.
Yes.
Which I'm really excited about. That's not the new one, Stand Up Magic. It's another one to come out next year. It's going to come out, actually, December this year. Scripting Magic by Pete McCabe. We've redesigned that. You can hear Josh, by the way. He's sound checking.
Yeah, sound checking. Josh in the background there.
So we have Scripting Magic and Scripting Magic 2 coming out. I'm really excited
about
that.
The first one was a good book, yeah. Yep.
Yeah, and we've redesigned it, and we've added a lot of photos and that kind of thing. So, yeah.
Okay.
Some plenty of books. Books are not dead, that's for sure.
I'm glad to hear that, because there are so many people who are buying things. Well, downloads, for an example. I'm sure you get a lot of those as well.
Oh, yeah.
And so people would rather watch rather than read, it seems like. So I'm glad to hear that.
I think there's an audience for both, and I'm more than happy with that. You know, that in my mind, the best way to teach magic is to use the best medium. So sometimes that's books, sometimes it's DVD or download. So it's all good with me.
But Andy, so this is not your first IBM convention. You're here helping Joshua. And was he in the UK with you and flew over then with you?
No,
you picked him up on the way?
It was just a last minute decision to fly over. Josh and I spend far too little of time together.
I'm sure. Yeah, I mean, you talk on Skype every day, I'm sure.
Every day for about an hour a day. Yeah. But we just haven't hung out for a while, and that's what this is about. So I've not come with any work in mind, and Josh is obviously lecturing here, but that's it. So we just want to hang out.
Yeah.
So he's my best friend, and we just want to have some time together doing some tricks.
Very cool.
That's my sole reason being here. Although we just worked out that we actually are seeing each other four times this month. So
yeah.
it was in that way a journey that didn't need to be done. But yeah, I'm just here to have fun.
Yep. Now, other conventions you're going to be going to this year? I mean, you went to Blackpool and some of the others. You're going to be coming to Magic Live, I guess.
Magic Live, yep. I'll be here for one day at Magic Live. Okay. It's my son's birthday on the second day, so I'm flying home for that.
Nice.
It's just kind of crazy flying in for a day, but it should be fun. I'm lecturing at the IBM in the UK, actually, since we're here.
For the British Ring Convention?
British Ring, yep. Okay. My first lecture in the IBM, actually, in the UK, so that'll be fun.
Now say hi, Josh. Just go on and just say hi.
Here he is.
That's right. We're kind of doing a live.
Are you talking about working the British Ring IBM convention? You know that's not true, right? He's always wanted to work it, but they've never let him. It's got nothing.
It's nothing factual. Too many conventions. I think it's like one a month I'm doing at the moment, and that's great. Mm-hmm. I love conventions. Is my favorite part of my job.
I love conventions as well. But now you're not always a dealer. I mean, Vanishing Ignite is always
actually very few people expect because we have quite a big online. Hello, person behind us. People think because we have a big online presence, we're at every convention dealing. But you know, we actually do one convention that we don't organize, and that's it, which is Blackpool. So yeah, we rarely have dealer stands, and there's a reason for that.
Why is that?
Me and Josh just love hanging out. So
and when you're behind the booth, you're working.
Exactly. Yeah. So we just prefer to instead of standing behind a table performing, deming tricks, we just hang out and show people tricks. It's much more fun.
Cool. See, we got another question over here. What 10 books do you think a young magician needs to start looking for now?
Should we go for one?
So Jonathan Allwood. Yeah, okay.
10's a while. This is going to turn into like some kind of online lecture. 10's a lot. Since he's here right now, is, of course, Josh. The Complete Course of Magic is
awesome.
The genre killer of...
It's got a DVD and everything in it, too.
And it's a brilliant DVD, and the whole book is great.
And not just for young magicians, either.
Oh, I agree. In fact, I bought it for my dad this year for Christmas.
Okay.
It's a great book, so that's the one for young magicians. Other books that I think every magician should read, of course, Books of Wonder are just phenomenal.
Oh, yeah, Tommy's books.
I've just reread those, actually.
What about Strong Magic?
Strong Magic is a perfect book. Now, I prefer, of the two, Designing Miracles, actually. Mm-hmm. But Strong Magic is great to give you an overview of magic. And
Eric Mead's book, I think, is good. The Web.
Yeah, The Web. It's great, too. But yeah, Designing Miracles is the book that I guess less people read compared to Strong Magic, but Designing Miracles, to me, is the perfect title for the book because it can really raise your magic a lot more than I think Strong Magic could, actually. Once you have a groundwork of knowledge that you find in Strong Magic, Designing Miracles is the book every magician should read.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've always recommended Henning Nelms' book, The Magic Showmanship. Showmanship for Magicians.
A little bit...
It's dated.
It's dated.
Yeah.
That was the word I was trying to find a way around.
Yeah.
But yes, it is a bit dated. But you know what? Here's the answer. Whichever book captures your imagination.
Yeah. Well, scripting is good. You talk about PK.
Scripting magic, it's great.
It's a great book.
Just whatever book covers the style of magic you're into. And,
that's a good point.
If you're reading, that's great. You're going to improve your magic.
Yeah, anyway. Okay, so we start to wrap up. Let's see if we got another question over here. So Baird Davis asks, can you give us any hints for other performances at Magi Fest 2017?
Yeah, I can not only give you hints, I can tell you the lineup.
Okay, let's do that.
Although this is the test, because when you organize two conventions, you cross them over a lot. There's two guys called the Other Brothers from Las Vegas, and they have really hit the scene hard over the last couple of months, and it's going to be their first convention lecture, and I think it's going to go down a storm. Two very creative magicians who perform a lot, and you can tell that in their work, and I think they're going to be real hits at Magi Fest this year. One of my best friends, Benjamin Earl, who I think is perhaps the world's best card magician, at least the best I've ever seen. He's going to be here. He never lectures, and he never lectures at conventions, but I managed to twist his arm after years of convincing him.
Nice.
So he is going to truly change the way you look at card magic, just because everything he does
What's his
looks
name
so
again?
Perfect. Benjamin Earl.
Benjamin Earl, okay.
Yeah,
I'll watch out for him.
He has some booklets out, has a DVD out, but he just, you know, the best way I can describe him is his slights have no edges. You know, when you see a lot of people do slights, there's always like a movement or a moment.
Mm-hmm.
Not with him. Everything looks
no ripple in the
natural.
Pond.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. It's
who else?
Who else? You're really testing me. Another friend of mine, Danny Buckler, who's a stand-up comedian from the UK.
Okay.
He is great.
John Archer, Trap of humor?
No, very different to John Archer. Okay. John Archer is very northern humor, and Danny Buckler is very southern humor, which is hard to understand if you're not from the UK.
Yeah.
But it's... yeah, he works at a lot of comedy clubs. He's opened up for some massive name comedians in the UK. So
there's Comedy Magic or mainly comedy?
Comedy Magic and comedy. So
interesting.
So yeah, I'm trying to think who we've announced because I don't want to say anyone who hasn't
been announced officially yet.
Here's a general one that you wouldn't expect me to know that much about. I guess Kids Magic. We have a Kids Magic lecture by somebody called Christopher T. Magician. You heard of this guy?
Christopher T. No.
I read his book and it's great. It's a book on Kids Magic and DVD on Kids Magic.
Excellent.
He just has a really original approach to kids magic, and part of what we do is to bring people that you may not have seen before and show them a whole new audience, and he's perfect for that because he just does a very different style of kids magic, very modern, so he'll be great.
Let's see what else we've got over here. Said, can you give any, okay, hints? I'm working libraries now and saw a great kids book by Josh.
Yeah, that's the one we were just talking about.
Yeah.
The Complete Course of Magic
that's
by
right.
Joshua.
Yeah,
Gay.
Very good.
It's great.
All right, well, we start to wrap up over here. That let me ask you, what is your magic word? I think I probably asked you this before, but things change. What is important to your life? What is your mantra? What's your philosophy of life? It could not just a word, it could be a phrase. What's important?
Just to, for me personally, it's just to do what I do the best I can. And I mean, I realize it's a simple answer, but to me, it's all about just being the best I can.
Okay. Yeah. Hey, Josh. So you're getting ready to leave. So, I mean, his lecture is going to be coming. Where is he? There he is.
Right away.
So that's right. If you guys were here at the convention, you would be able to hear and see Josh at 3:00. So that's it. Thank you guys very much.
Thanks, guys.
Till next time. That was Andy Gladwin.
Goodbye.
And this is Scotty out. And now for something a little bit different. At this year's convention, Johnny Thompson and Pam, better known as Thompsonian Company, are the featured guests. And on the first evening, on Saturday night, we had a full house for all the magicians to come in and to listen to a wonderful discussion that was hosted by Paul Vigil, in which that he was asking several questions and was talking about Johnny's beginnings with the Harmonic Hats and then going into how he had met Pam. And, of course, once that you ask Johnny a question that he's just got plenty of stories. It's kind of like George Burns asking Gracie, how's your mom? And then she takes off from there. Certainly that he's got a lot of stories. Well, this it is a two-part type of thing. I'm going to play it all here for you now, but I broke it up because at one point he stopped to do a mentalism routine in which he had three people come up and had cards selected, and then he told them, not selected, he just fanned the card, said look at and think of a card, and then he told them which card it was. And then he did another trick, which he is famous for, that was from his trade show days. Anyhow, I cut that part out because he was not using a microphone, and you could not hear this very well at all. So that part has been cut out. But I would also say that at the beginning of this, I was kind of late in starting the microphone recording on this. So you kind of get it when he is already into his story and talking a little bit about his beginnings with the Harmonic Hats. Again, this is Paul Vigil, who is acting as the host on this panel discussion, if you will, between himself and Johnny Thompson, with Pam chiming in from time to time. I think you will enjoy the stories here. And so now let me kind of back out of the way and let you enjoy a few stories from Thompsoni and Company.
We did a show in 1957 at the Clean Gas Company out of St. Louis. It was a television show, and we flew back into Midway, and driving down Cicero, my partner Jerry Huron fell asleep at the wheel, and I looked up and saw a train and the gates coming down, and I yelled to Jerry, we're going to die, and he crashed through them, and we got caught between, it was an elevated train on the ground level, and we were caught between the train and a lamppost. And luckily we had a four door, because the front two doors were completely encased between the train and the telephone pole. And no one would come and help us, and we didn't know why. And Jerry had broken ribs, and my face hit the dashboard, went out through the windshield, because in those days you only had a safety belt along your waist. And Jerry managed to pull me over in the back seat. And now I realize that, well, at the time we realized why no one came near us. We were sitting on the third rail, the electric rail. And we got about 40 feet out, and the tire deflated, and the hubcap hit the rail, and The car blew up and shorted out the entire elevated system for the South Side of Chicago. So I was forced out of the group because it took about 6 months for me to recover. And during that time, I put the jazz group together.
It ripped part of your face off, right?
Yeah.
But you also suffered from seizures for a while.
I had 5 years of epilepsy. I called it traumatic epilepsy from a blow on the head.
They probably hate this story.
You know. Well, it explains a lot of my weird oddities. But I haven't had a seizure since 1962. Except when you keep pestering me.
You know, this brings up, John's finishing his book up now, and hopefully it will be done sometime soon. And I keep telling him that I want him to put a chapter in this book called The Nine Lives of John Thompson and tell 8 stories and not leave the 9th one, because this is one story, but this guy has had some dances with death that you couldn't be any closer to. One time he's driving down a freeway. A tornado picks him up in the air like Wizard of Oz and flies him around in the air and drops him off on the other highway going the opposite direction.
That's true. I was going to see her doing a play with June Havok.
So you were talking about 1957. When was the first year you went to Las Vegas then, John?
My first year in Las Vegas was 1951 with the Harmonicats, and there were only 5 hotels on the Strip. There was the El Rancho. Everyone thinks the Flamingo was the first hotel because of Bugsy Siegel supposed to be building it, but it was the second hotel. The first hotel was the El Rancho, which had an electrical storm fire, kind of mafia lightning.
Like kitchen fire.
Yeah. And there was also the Desert Inn, the Last Frontier, and the Bingo Club, which later became the Sahara. But that was my first time working at the Last Frontier.
Where was the first place you did magic in Las Vegas then?
The Aladdin Hotel in 1974.
Okay.
We opened Christmas Day.
So, before that though, you were at the Playboy Club.
Well, yeah, I worked at the Playboy Club for years. In a review show with 2 great friends of mine I grew up with. We all played harmonicas as kids. They were a comedy team named Lewis and Christie, and they did the Sullivan Show, and they did Johnny Carson and everything, and we wrote review shows for the Playboy Club, and we're a big hit. And
a great story about this comedy duo that were his friends is John taught him the wizard trick. And so these guys would be with all the comedians at 4
o'clock. Oh, maybe I better tell you. You all know the wizard's trick with the telephones. It's one of the great old telephone tricks. So I taught him the wizard's trick. And about 3 weeks later, at 5 in the morning, my phone rings and we said, "Is the wizard there?" And I go to the clubs, hearts, spades. They say, "Yes, spades. AIDS, music." Well, another week goes by, 6 in the morning, phone rings, "Is the wizard there?" They did this for 3 weeks till I caught on. On the other end, they had 6 comics there, and they were passing the phone, listening, having them all listening. We were going, "Clubs, hearts," and waking me up in the middle of the night.
Playboy Club, though, is where you also got your interest in mentalism.
Yeah.
And seeing Al Coran perform?
No, it was Chan Canasta.
Chan Canasta, I'm sorry.
But I did get into mentalism throughout the... I was a trade show magician for the first part of my life in magic. When I got back into magic after I left the harmonica world. And Al Coran's agent was a man named Harry Green, married to Celeste Evans. Harry Green was a harmonica player, and he was one of those, if they gave him 15 minutes, he would do 45. So when he became an agent and a manager, we were all happy. None of us ever had to follow him. But he came to me and he said, "Al wants to get into trade shows." And I said, "Well, I can do that." So I set him up with a company I was working for about 6 months for the trade shows. Then unfortunately, Al got cancer, and I had to fulfill those dates. So I used to go to Al's house every week or so, a couple times during the week. And that's how I took my Nemo wallet trick and combined it with Al's Encore wallet. And I learned to do the Quran medallion, but I wore it around my neck like a medallion. And Al thought that was even better than reaching into the pocket, taking it out. But through Al, I developed a metal act and did it for 3 years on trade shows.
What do you think about performing a little piece for these people right now?
Okay, sure.
All right.
Where the hell did that come from? And it looks like it's going to be 3 volumes. Originally it was going to be 2, but they wanted me to do a biography also. And we're working on that right now. And it's all my work. It's everything I've ever done. It's stage magic, dub magic, close-up magic, trade show work. It even gives examples of my trade show scripts so that someone could learn how to actually pitch on a trade show floor. You know, when you're doing trade shows, you're not just being, what are you doing? I thought you were picking my pocket, for God's sake. And if you were, you're not that good. But we're looking forward to getting the book out this year. Thank you. I'm sorry, I waved my hand and turned it off.
What did you tell them about the first adventure?
Trying to figure out how to have this is what happened the last time I was in Texas with Tom Mulligan.
What was there?
So what did you tell them about the first adventure?
Oh, yes, when I was 12 years old, I was very lucky. You know, I started out not wanting to be a magician. I wanted to be a card cheater. So I saw a movie about a Mississippi riverboat gambler when I was 8 years old. I've been trying to find that film. I couldn't remember the name. My folks used to take me to an art house which showed foreign films, but I'm not sure if it was that theater or the Plaza Theater which showed regular films, but I got just enamored with the Derringer hat and the frock coat and the brocade vest and the card dealing, and I said, that's what I want to be, a card cheater. I didn't know that, you know, all of the boats were in dry dock like the Delta Queen, and you couldn't gamble on trains anymore, but that's what I wanted to be. And my mother took me to a used bookstore, and I bought the only book I could find on card cheating, The Expert at the Card Table, for 35 cents. And I spent the next 4 years trying to master just about everything in it. And after 4 years, I came to the rude awakening. There were not a lot of places for a 12-year-old card cheater to work. So I looked in the back of the book, and it showed you how to apply those moves to magic. In fact, the first trick I did was the card through the handkerchief. But because of my being able to do Urban Ace effects and moves. At 12, I got to meet people, started going into the magic shops then, because in Chicago we had National Magic, Joe Berg Magic, Ireland Magic, and Abbott's Magic. And I met Paul DePaul, I met Paul Rossini, and Louis Zingoni. Now Louis Zingoni I met in a strange thing. When I was 12 was a great year for me. We had the world's largest amusement park in Chicago. It was called Riverview. It was 2 miles of Midway. And they had a 10-in-1 show, which in the business is the name for a freak show. It means 10 attractions under one roof, 10-in-1. And I wanted to go there to be the magician. I was 12. I had a Social Security card from being an usher. I told him I was 16, I was already about 5'10", and no one questioned me, but they said, no, we already have a magician. He said, too bad you don't swallow swords or eat fire. I said, oh, but I do. I ran to Abbott's and I bought a book called Thrilling Magic, which showed you how to eat light bulbs, land a bed of spikes, swallow swords, and eat fire. Eating fire was easy. I learned it in a week. Swallowing swords was really difficult. And I'm slowly getting to my first convention. So I went back about 2.5 months later, and they had a long season, and I got the job. I only lasted 2 weeks. I was fired over a regurgitator named Waldo the Human Ostrich. Now, I will tell you a funny story about Waldo. You know, in a 10-in-1 show, everyone has an extra way of making money. The fat lady sells pictures of herself. The giant sells wooden rings that are about that big around that fit his finger, but they're replicas of it. And Waldo didn't have to do that. Now, Waldo was very short, almost dwarf-like. He had an extended sternum, which they call a chicken breast, a humpback, eczema and warts on his face, and a Viennese accent. And he would come out and he would say, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, my name is Waldo the Human Ostrich. I've been written up 6 times in Robert L. Ripley's Believe It or Not column. I will show you in a minute why they call me the Human Ostrich. I always cough when I do that voice. And anyway, he would then produce a pie pan and he would say, I want you to put some change in here. If you put a penny in, I will give you a penny back at the end of the show. If you put a quarter, I will give you a quarter, a nickel, whatever you put in, I will give you back. So people loaded the plate with money and he says, this is why they call me the Human Ostrich. And he downed all the money. And he opened his mouth, there was nothing there. It's amazing. He said, I'm still hungry. Maybe I should have some donuts. So he took plastic bridle rings, clapped them together, stuck them in his mouth, kind of like a reverse Ubek, like that, popped them, swallowed them, opened his mouth, nothing there. People were amazed and aghast. He said, I'm still hungry, and this is before sushi. He said, maybe I will have a fish course. He brought out a little goldfish bowl, caught the goldfish, put it in his mouth, let the tail move a little, went, opened his mouth, nothing there. Now women are passing out. He said, I'm still hungry, maybe some filet mignon. He brought a cage out with a white mouse in it, held it by the tail, and this was his idea of humor. He took out a toothbrush and brushed it across the mouse's tush. And then he would put the mouse in his mouth, leave the tail out wiggling, and go, now men were passing out. And we don't need to see your mouth, we believe it's good. And he said, now for the finale, I would like to have some dessert. And they bring out a bowl of lemons, and the audience always picked the biggest lemon, and he swallowed that. And he'd stand there for a minute, and then he would regurgitate and bring up the lemon. He'd bring up the white mouse alive right into the cage, the goldfish right into the bowl, swimming around. Out came the bridle, and then out came all the money. Nobody took a dime. Now, I got fired in 2 weeks because of Waldo, the Human Ostrich. He was on stage one night and just swallowed the lemon, and something was different. Now, we were going to be the last two acts that night, and I was going to learn how to close out the 10-in-1 show. Because after the last act, they move you into what was called the annex, and you'd see some real people that were called freaks, you know. When I was working there was a woman named the Mule Face Lady. She had a veil. When she took it off, she had like a horse's face. It was amazing. So Waldo and I were going to clean up while everyone was in the annex, but Waldo was on stage, and all of a sudden he started getting beat red, and then he started getting kind of bluish brown, and he keeled over. And I ran next door. Now, next door was a Hofbrauhaus, and behind it a beer garden, and behind it was the park had its own Chicago Fire Department because it was 2 miles of Midway. And they came over with a pull motor, pumped his stomach, and got everything out. But unfortunately, they killed the rat and the white mouse and the fish. And Waldo came over to me afterward, and I thought he was going to thank me for saving his life, because I didn't know this happened every so often, you know, because sometimes the lemon would get caught the wrong way, and he couldn't get it out. And he said, come up to me, he says, what the hell is wrong with you, kid? I said, what's wrong, Waldo? He said, why didn't you do what everyone else does when I get the lemon caught in my throat? I said, what's that, Waldo? He said, hit me on the hump. When he said, hit me on the hump, I started laughing and I was fired the next day. So, you better believe it. But at 12, as I said, a lot of things happened, and I went to my first magic convention with Paul DePaul. By the way, my school teacher was Brother John Hammond. I was very lucky to be surrounded by such great magic. And the way I met Louis Andoni, I was in front of the preacher doing the Earth Days One Hand Cup when this man came up to me and said, where'd you learn that, kid? I said, out of this book called The Expert at the Card Table. He introduced himself to me. Well, I didn't know who he was. I soon found out after I watched him do some magic. And he was running his in-law's skee-ball exhibit directly across from the freak show. So I used to have lunch with him every day. And when I did get fired, he came over and said, hey, there's a magic show on the other side of the park looking for an assistant. And he sent me over and I got the job there and finished the season out. But anyway, when I went to my first convention, on it was Cardini, Vernon. I saw Jacob Daly doing all of his shuffle stuff. I saw Ed Marlowe standing nearby watching it. And I was so scared of how good everyone was. I said, I could never be that good. I didn't go to another magic convention until I was in my 30s.
Wow.
That's what I said, wow.
You know what? How did you and Pam meet?
Ah. Oh.
This story.
I met Norm Nielsen in the early 60s. I saw him work at St. Alphonsus Church in Chicago on a combined IBM-SAM convention. And at that time, Norman was producing cigarettes, and they were kind of colored cigarettes, pink and blue, and he was producing doves and coins and cards, and he finished with the Thayer Vanishing Birdcage. And then I met him at Jay Marshall's and we hit it off, and I used to go up every weekend to work on him, and we were both working on, he was working on his new act with the violin and I was putting an act together because I got out of the harmonica business. And with the jazz group, I kept having the musicians move and get out of the group, and I had to find somebody else. And I had some great musicians. One of the great black jazz drummers, Jack DeJohnette, with my group. And now he's a big name with Keith Jarrett. Because of the change of personnel, I decided I'm going to go back to magic because I only have to rely on myself. So, starting to lose train what I'm talking about.
I was asking you about meeting Pam, so you're telling
me. Oh, yes, her. Yes. Norm and I, to repay Norm for his kindness of letting me use his shop and working on our stuff together, I started developing tricks for him. The first one was a bottle through the table. The vanishing dove cage that Norm puts out was my dove cage, which worked differently than Channing's.
And that's how you met Pam.
I'm kidding. Keep it up, I'm about to cast a spell on you. Now you made me lose my train of thought. Oh no, okay. So the bird harnesses, the rubber doves, and the beer bottles, were all ideas of mine, and we were selling I had a booth on the second Magic Convention we were both working. It was the first one of Hank Borehouse's conventions in Chicago, Palos Park, Illinois. And we were having lunch, and I looked up and I saw this blonde woman, and I was married at the time, and I saw this blonde woman with a 12-year-old boy, and I said to Norman, that's the woman I should have married. And it was Pam. And then I was a trade show worker, and the next year I'm doing a trade show in Chicago, and working across from me were three girls, and one of them was Pam. I walked in this morning and she was talking with a model that I worked with, and I walked up and I said, were you at a magic convention in Palos Park last year? And she said, yeah, and then just went right back to talking. I went, oh, well, that's the end of that. And but then I kept meeting her on trade shows, and then my friend Bob, I was Bob Crane's closest, that male friend, and I knew Bob when he was a disc jockey, and I have to really tell you, the movie Autofocus is a lot of artificial BS. No, but I'm getting there. I will tell you that Bob was a wonderful,
really important part, guy,
and it was actually a mob hit that got him killed, and I'll leave it at that. Anyway, Bob came in and saw me doing this review with Lewis and Christie that we wrote for the Playboy Clubs. And afterward, he said, why don't you come and see my show? I've got a brand new show, Beginner's Luck. This is the show he was doing when he was killed. And so we went to see it. Who was his leading lady but Pam? And a year later, he called me. And at this time, I was estranged from my wife in the middle of a divorce. And he said, I'm doing a play called Who Was That Lady in Pheasant Run, Illinois, about 90 miles out of Chicago. And he said, I want you to do one of the parts. I know you're an actor. And so I said, okay, that'd be great. And I got the rehearsal first day, and who was his lady, leading lady, but Pam. And now I was single, and I made a move, and it worked. It didn't work? I thought it did. Hell, I guess I thought I did better than I did.
They were playing Jim.
Oh, well, no, that was, yes. She was playing Jim. While between takes and rehearsals, she said, do you play cards? I play gin. She said, I got to warn you, I'm very good. I went, oh, okay. So we played gin, and I let her win for a few hands. And then I started hustling her, and we were betting for some supposed money, and she ended up owing me thousands and thousands of dollars. And then I didn't dare have the nerve at that time to tell her I was cheating her. I did that after we got married, and I don't think she's ever forgiven me for that. But that's how we met, and in the first 2 years we were married, I was in Vegas, she was on the road with Bob Crane, and I think I saw her 12 weeks the first year and 9 weeks the second. And
Got along great.
Yeah, we didn't see each other, no wonder. We might try that again there.
Too late.
So anyway, where the hell was I again? Everyone interrupts me and I get... We were talking about how we met.
No, and we were already married.
Now we're married. Well, I got a call. Well, I'm going to tell you how you joined the act. I got a call from my agent at the time, and she said, Cary Grant and Joan Rivers were going to do a comedy hunk at the Academy of Magical Arts award show, and Joan got a real job and left, and Cary was afraid to do it. They wanted him to do it with another comedian, and he was a bit too nervous to do that. So they called me and they said, we're looking for a comedy magic act. So I said, I do it. We were on strike at that time in Vegas. And my assistant was out of town. So he said to Pam, you're going to have to be my assistant for this. So as we drove in, because we were both actors, Pam studied with Lee Strasberg, I studied with Uta Hagen out of New York. And we subtext what I thought was going on inside my head and what should be going on inside her head.
but we never rehearsed. And when we got out, we were getting laughs where I never got laughs before, and I didn't know what she was doing because I'm playing to the audience. But it was so great, and right after the show, Steve Lawrence and Edie Gourmet came backstage and wanted us to open for him. And so I turned to her and I said, tell Bob Crane you're going to do one more show and then we're going to start doing a double. And we've done that for 40 years.
Speaking of John, and through your magic you have such great acting. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about Uta.
Uta Hagen?
Yeah.
Well, I think she was the best teacher of the method of anyone I ever met, although Pam's teacher was a man who was known for teaching the method. In fact, he taught Brando and a lot of people. Pam was in an acting class with what was his name? The guy who played the father on the Raymond show. Everybody Loves Raymond, yeah. Well, whoever that guy was, when my hair's off, I look exactly like him.
Peter Boyle.
Yes. Anyway, yeah, Uta was maybe just a wonderful teacher. I remember telling me a story one day, a couple of things she told me. One of the things she said, whatever you used to get into a role, never tell anyone, even the director. She said, keep it to yourself. And that was a rule I lived by. And she said one day she was doing, she did Country Girl before the movie on Broadway. And she said she had a scene, and this is a story about a country girl who marries an actor who's been down on his luck, who's making a comeback. And he was an alcoholic, and that's what got him out of the business. And so during rehearsals for this new show, he comes home drunk. And she said, I had to grab him by the hand and take him to the sink, and although I was angry with him, I had to clean him up. And she said, the only substitution I could figure for that was when my little girl comes home and she does something wrong and I have to do the same thing. And then she told me something really interesting. She said, my substitution actually was the real thing. That's what I would have done with my husband if he did the same thing. So she was a brilliant, brilliant acting teacher, and I was lucky enough to have one-on-one lessons with her. Normally she taught a class.
To the end, John, maybe I should ask you about some of the people that you've worked with, because there's been so many of them. Penn and Teller, David Blaine, Chris Angel, Lance Burton, Siegfried and Roy, Amazing Jonathan, Matt Franco. How do you feel all of these people around you?
All the Well, you know, every one of them has a different brand of magic, and it's it makes it great fun for me because I have to get into their head and think like them. You know, I mean, Penn and Teller's magic's different from anyone else. Lance Burton, Lance Burton and I were together 30 years. You know, I met him in Wichita, Kansas at Joe Stevens' last magic convention in Wichita. And he came to my room and he wanted to learn how to do the Channing's Doug the Silk routine. But we talked about birds and wardrobe and everything, and all of a sudden he kind of showed up in Hollywood when I was there, and we hung out together. And one day he said to me, Jay Marshall said I should change my zombie ball to a different object. And Glenn said, well, I think I'm going to use the round ball that's on my lamppost. And I said, I don't think that's a good idea. I'll give you an idea that I was going to do but never did. I used to produce white parakeets with their tails cut off. An idea I got from Howard Brooks, a great comedy magician from Florida. He invented the bra trick, he invented the ruler out of the watch, the slide rule, and he used to do an egg bag routine, and he finished by reproducing he said, this is the reproducers of the eggs in the bag. Here's the mama, here's the papa, and he produced a white parakeet with the tail cut off, and he said, and here's a baby from a previous marriage. And so I called Howard, and he gave me permission to do that. So I used to produce white parakeets, and I told this to Lance, and I said, I've always thought about using a spherical cage with a white parakeet inside of it. And Lance liked the idea, and that was the first thing we collaborated on. And we've been friends and collaborators ever since, and he's one of the great joys of my life, knowing Lance and being involved with him over 30 years. And
he's in bed. He's asleep.
Lance is asleep?
Yes. Okay.
Well, it's that beard. You know, he said... Yeah, he said ZZ Top. I think he's going for Duck Dynasty.
Are you talking hairstyles again?
Yes, sir.
Be careful.
Oh, no, I don't have any worries. I got more than this one.
I've been authorized by me. Offer you $20.
Yes.
To take that thing off.
No, don't do it, John. I've been authorized by me to offer you $100 to shave. Grabs. I've never not shaved. Put your mic up. Yes, that's how I got my mother. By the way, my mother was in show business. My mother had an all-world orchestra, and she worked all the Al Capone speakeasies between Chicago and Milwaukee. And she also did a sister act, and so she was very behind me when it came to being in show business, and she helped me a great deal.
Albert Cantu, though, he wore a serape.
Well, let me explain that. So, I do remember some of this. So, my mother, when she quit show business, she didn't act as Mitzi and Buys, worked with Ruby Keeler. My mother was pretty much in show business, and she stayed in with places like the Showman's League and the Grandmother's Club. And the Showman's League in Chicago was a showing date. And in the club date field, that was a place where acts would come in, perform, and agents would come into the Showman's League and see the new acts coming in town and see if they could book them. And anytime there was a magician, my mother would take me. And I went this one time and Abel Cantu was there. And I was fascinated with the birds. And a couple of years later, he died in an automobile accident. Actually, he was replacing Del Rey. And if you ever brought up his name in front of Del Rey, he got very maudlin and morose about it because he always felt he was responsible for Abel's death. But I saw Abel Cantu, who was wearing a charro outfit, which is what the mariachis wear. And a serape, which you don't wear with a mariachi outfit, but most people didn't realize that. And I realized where the birds were coming from and what it was, and after Abel died, I decided to get involved with the birds. And my father used to raise pigeons, so he was very helpful teaching me how to feed them, take care of them, and that's why Lance and myself and Fielding West and the late Amos Lefkovich, all our birds live to be 25 to 30 years old. In fact, I just put my birds in a bird sanctuary, and they are all between 25 and 28 years old, and those are my current workers. So, anyway, Abel Cantu was my inspiration, and because of Urban Ace, I thought I could find a better way to steal them. Abel actually just kind of pulled them out of the serape because of the way it was arranged. And it took me about 6 weeks, but I worked out a way that I could do this with sleight of hand without moving my arms or anything, just holding up the handkerchief and producing a bird. And it's made me a great living through my whole life.
Thank you. Thank you.
And this guy didn't do bad either.
Yeah.
Johnny's were so helpful in all of my magic, my television specials. Those of you who saw the show in the last few years, the opening number where I appeared with the invisible man and the flesh appeared in the veins and I came down. That was Johnny's illusion, as were many, many of the things in my show. And recently, you saw a little trailer of the movie. It was great to be able to shoot the movie. Paul is in the movie also, and is a fantastic actor. But it was great to be able to work with John and Pam, and I got to direct John and Pam in the movie, and they're both fantastic. And Hayes is hilarious.
Thank you.
And John's role is more—he's funny, but he's more of a serious role.
Mafioso
guy. So I can't.
What's wrong with that?
Yeah. I can't wait for you to see them in the movie.
You are brilliant. You're going to be so famous. He's got a commercial in here.
Yeah, and I know you're, I'm not going to say anything more than this, but I know you're getting ready to work on another film.
Oh, I am?
Yes, you are.
Okay.
I'm going to do one more, if that's all you have.
We'll cut it after that then.
Okay.
Thanks everybody for spending some time with us tonight.
If I could get a little table.
So we can ask if there's any questions in the audience.
Yeah. Is there anything anybody want to ask either Pam or I?
Can we bring the house lights up a little bit?
Thank you. It's an old joke, but it still works. Thank you, Roy Benson. Not as much as I used to, because I had no one else to play with, and bass harmonic is kind of like bass fiddle, you know, you need other guys to play with.
And I'm not learning the harmonic.
Say that again?
Dry cleaning bill.
Well, my dry cleaning bill, well, to tell you the truth about the bird defecation, I found a product years ago called Crazy Foam. And they took it off the market, but it's back on the market. And it's a foam, soap foam that you put, give kids and they can mold with it. It's kind of like a paste form. And I used it, the way I found out about it, I called the Tonight Show when I was going to open in New York at the Playboy Club the first time, because I was using shaving cream and it was not doing well on my coat. And I said, what do you guys use for pies in the face? And they said, Crazy Foam. Well, Crazy Foam, when it dries, becomes a powder. You can just brush it off and it doesn't damage your clothes. We used to just liquefy it a little bit by adding some water. But that's what we use for bird defecation. And I cleaned that up.
Are you going to do your stuff?
Yeah.
Maybe we could get a camera up here for this last trick?
Or at least a table. I can handle it. Yeah, small table. Well, it's a music stand, but I guess it'll work.
Are you doing the ballad, Johnson?
Yeah.
Oh, this one.
Yeah.
Do we have a little table? And Sean, you said that maybe we could get a camera up here. This is another one that will be in John's book, and it's actually an effect that he's been teaching the pen.
As a matter of fact, Penn performed it for his first time two nights ago and called me and said he was a big hit. And when he came to me and said he wanted to learn this, I said, this is the toughest thing I have to do, Penn. Are you sure you want to learn this?
There's some really, really tough slides in this.
But I had a friend, my mechanic in Chicago, I had the most expensive mechanic to build my props. He was the vice president of the Wrigley Chewing Gum Company, a man named Boz Bulovic. He's the only one in the company who started out as a machinist and worked his way up through the family. Most of the time, all the people in the upper echelon were either married into the family or relatives. And he's the only one who became the number two position through just honest hard work. And anyway, he was my mechanic, and his brother was an artist who had a great art studio. I had the oldest jail in Chicago, where Al Capone and everyone was held, and he made it into an art studio. And he was a very clever guy. And I used to perform at some of his affairs, and people like Hugh Hefner would show up, and the mayor, he used to have some great parties, and I would do close-up magic. And one day he said to me, you're such a wonderful magician that I'm going to write something very special for you that I think will elevate your magic. Now, he had never written a ballad or a poem, but he wrote this for me, and it's in the style of Robert Service, and it's really beautifully written. I hope I do it justice.
Maybe tomorrow.
Okay, maybe I'll do it tomorrow. I fell today and hurt this hand, and my fingers aren't quite as good as they should be. Mentalism was easy. Sleight of hand's a little different.
Hey, we appreciate it, John.
I promise I will do it for you before the convention goes. Thank you, everybody, for spending some time with us tonight. Thank you very much. Thank you all, and I thank you for such a wonderful honor that you've given my wife and I, and we really appreciate it. And thank you, IBM, and all you wonderful magicians. And we're in the greatest business in the world, you know. I've been in every form of the show business practically. I've been an actor, a musician, an orchestrator, and a magician. But there's nobody like magicians, you know. Doesn't matter if you're an amateur, or semi-pro, or professional. We all get along together. We all have the same love together. And I've been stuck in countries where I didn't have a prop, and I find a magician in the phone book and call them up, and they come through for you. And there's never been anything like this in show business. We have the greatest group of entertainers there is. Thank you all.